On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of the sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Right up, you will be amazed, you will be dumbfounded, you will be thunderstruck. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. You cannot tell your Morans without a program. No one will be admitted to this thin veil, this thin canvas veil behind me here, behind which reside morans shocking to the conscience, morans unbelievable to the human eye, unlistenable to the human ear. Hurry, hurry, hurry. It is Moran Monday on the horn. No cost at all, just a strong stomach and a willingness to contemplate the idiocy of the right wing in America. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Moran Monday begins now on the horn. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Step right up. Show your courage. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Oh, I love doing that. I love doing this. It's my favorite day of the week. It is Monday. And after a very, very busy week in Pittsburgh, we have a normal, well, you know, I mean, as far as this network is concerned, normal, you know. We all remember what Peter Godbolt said. Normal is only a setting on the dryer. But no, we've got a regular, yeah, that'll work, regular. We've got a regular broadcast week ahead of us, and I am terribly, terribly happy to make that announcement. Oh, yeah, 10-4, good buddies, we are here, rubber duck. So, it is, it's Moran Monday on the horn. And we've got, as usual, we have a number of nominees. We've got a sort of retired Jersey installment from Caribou Barbie, the half-wit, half-term governor. We've got an entry from her. You know, when you've gone pro like she has, when you've gone Moran pro, you can't expect her just to quit competing. It's the beauty queen syndrome. It's the pageant syndrome. Even though they're not playing the music or singing the song anymore, she just can't resist getting out on the Moran runway and taking one more stroll for the crown. So we got Mussolini tonight. But we've got so much more than that. We've got ordinary, everyday Morans. Just your garden variety work, Morans for the working day. Or not. We've got those kind of Morans. And we've even got, Cretaceous Morans. Really, Cretaceous. And then we've got media Morans. The only thing is, I'm not sure if the media Morans are them or us. I will leave that up to you to decide. And a couple of announcements here and there. I am a grandfather for the third time. Littlest guy having been born this past Saturday. Mother and baby are doing fine. They're home. Agnes is in full-on sweat condition alpha granny mode. You can't take the baby away. You ever seen those the gorillas in the zoo, and they get them a doll baby, and you can't take the doll baby away from the gorilla because you don't want a pissed off gorilla? Agnes, really? Every time Honey, what's going on? Oh, you've got the baby. And he is as cute as can be. Oh, he's just a little precious fellow. And whenever he's asleep and Agnes is holding him, he is sleeping with a smile that I am quite certain is not gas. She really is. She's a pro with this little bitty baby thing. If we hadn't taken matters into our own hands, I'm quite certain that between the two of us, we would be the Waltons by now. Really. I mean, you know, at our advanced middle age, we'd have one in the cradle. But she's the smart one, and she just looked at me and said, "No more, Bob! No more!" So she's got grandbabies to play with. And so far, the other two, Loni and Jasper, have been very, very good. Jasper is absolutely hell-bent on giving his baby brother his bottle. If it gets set down, he picks it up and gets, bottle. Because, you know, he's two, and he's a big helper because he's a big boy. And Loni's all excited and hovering about and sort of like a little bee buzzing around the room. It's cute. What can you say? It's cute. And just, you know, just a moment of reflection on last week. I know it was frustrating for a lot of people not to have the show on at 6 p.m. But I've talked about where this network can go and what this network can be. And like I said, maybe I said this Friday, we got a little tiny vision, just peeped over the mountaintop and off to the promised land in the distance, and we saw it. We saw things that the horn can do. You and I and the folks involved with the horn have talked about this idea of creating our own little liberal internet C-SPAN. And we took a step in that direction. I mean, my God, we went to Pittsburgh, and we did, on very little money, what it would have taken a $10 million truck to do. That is, broadcast that meeting to the entire world. We did it. We did it. We just did it. Because we can, and because it matters. And because building a liberal media infrastructure is about the most important thing that liberals could be doing right now. I mean, yes, I know all the things that confront us, whether it be social or environmental or political. But none of that matters if the message doesn't get out. If the message doesn't get out, it's all lights under a bushel. We've got to get the message out. And, of course, that has been our dogged and determined goal from the date that the horn got started. But we did it. We took a little baby step, and we made amazing things happen. If you happen to have been listening to the Rick Smith Show over the weekend, especially the Sunday show, you would have heard excerpts from a number of the interviews that he did with some pretty heavy hitters from the labor movement. AFL-CIO President Trumka was there. Steelworkers President Leo Girard sat down for an extended conversation with Rick Smith. So did UMWA President Cecil Roberts. And I was proud to engineer and produce a whole bunch of that. Genuinely proud. So while it was tough being away from the microphone, it was awfully pleasurable seeing what can happen and where these things can go. And where these things can go because you have insisted on building this, and we've been willing to do the work. Because God knows, getting the well-to-do, the money people, to support this has proven incredibly difficult over the years. That's the liberal money people. The other money people, the right-wing money people, well, if you saw the show post for this evening's Moran Monday edition of The Horn, you would have seen where I noted that we've got competition for the Morans. You know, we do one night a week of Moran Monday.
but with a lot of farting and belching and snorting and knuckle walking and mouth breathing and general hullabaloo, a new TV network has been announced. The birth of a new right-wing TV network, 24/7, baby, messaging all the time, has been announced. Here's a little excerpt.
How many of y'all out there consider yourselves Democrats? How many of y'all out here consider yourselves Republicans? How many of y'all out here consider yourselves Americans? I now work for a new network called Right Network. Right Network is going to be for people who work for a living, people that break their backs paying more than their fair share of taxes, for people who believe in this country and believe that we do not have to apologize to anyone. Right Network is for people that live in what they call flyover country and what we call America. Right Network. Because what you've been seeing on TV isn't all of America. May God bless the military. May God bless each and every one of you. And may God bless the United States of America. That feels right, doesn't it?
Yeah, the Right Network. Because, you know, Fox isn't right-wing enough. That was from their little introductory babble blurble at Searchlight Nevada earlier this month. The Right Network will launch this summer, and it will be done in partnership with Comcast. Yeah, that Comcast. That Comcast that is the sole available internet provider to so many people is taking the money that you're paying them, and they are churning it into the creation of this 24-hour-a-day right-wing cesspool. Death panels and birthers and deathers and tenthers and booger eaters, 24/7, baby! Comcast Spectacor, Jesus, that sounds like something from Get Smart. Spectacor. Chairman Ed Snyder said, "We're creating a welcome space for millions and millions of Americans who've been looking for an entertainment network and media channel that reflects their point of view. Right Network will be the perfect platform to entertain, inform, and connect with the American majority about what's right in the world." Let's check in with the liberal media infrastructure. Kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya. Kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya. They're calling us liberals, Lord. Kumbaya. Oh, Lord. Kumbaya. Liberal elite, how about a little something, you know, for the effort?
Oh, gee. We're sorry, people who would like to build a liberal media infrastructure. We don't have any money for that sort of things. What we want you to do is build a blog and do it for free, okay? Now, if you do it for free for 50 years, we might underwrite you to the tune of $100. But of course, if we do that, we will need a strict accounting of everything that you spend the money on. And we don't want you using too many paper clips or too many staples. And if you don't give our stapler back, we'll burn this building to the ground, okay?
Yeah, really. Really. Where's the left network? Where's the liberal network?
Well, y'all got it all. It's the liberal media anyway. Bull.
Where's the liberal network? Where are the millionaires ponying up? You know, and I'm not talking about me. I'm not talking about the horn. I'm talking about just do it, for Christ's sakes. Just do it. I mean, did you catch that quote?
Right Network will be the perfect platform to entertain, inform, and connect with the American majority about what's right in the world. Millions and millions of Americans who've been looking for an entertainment network and media channel that reflects their point of view.
Shh. Don't tell Comcast Spectacore Chairman Ed Snyder that there are millions and millions of liberals, too. Don't tell him. Don't tell him because he doesn't want to know. Don't tell him because he doesn't care. Because at the end of the day, you know, I mean, come on, we know, right? We know what kind of ads are going to run on Right Network. The usual suspects. Vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls, Swedish mattresses, and herbal erection guaranteeing pill programs. 30 days supply for free when you order now if you're a caller. If you're one of the first 100 callers, glory to God. Buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Are you stressed out? I'm Lucinda Babbitt from the Stress Center. I'm Dr. Ed Nittenberg. Join us on matchesmadeinheaven.com, where we're putting together, through our scientifically gathered survey of opinions and preferences, we're putting together Christian couples in eternal holy matrimony. That's the advertising. But you know what? The advertising doesn't matter, because the money that is behind this doesn't give a damn about making a penny. They will gladly lose it all day long for decades, as long as they know that they are controlling the airwaves, and as long as they know that our side, isn't even in the fight. So that's why I said, I'm not sure who the Moran nominee is on this story for Moran Monday. Is it them? You know, for putting together programming that's going to pander to the stupidest among us. Or is it us? I mean, not us, not you. But is it the Soroses of the world? The so-called liberal money people? Who could fight back. And it's not that they're not able. It's that they're unwilling. Who's the moron here? Speaking of liberals with money, oh, you're going to love this one. Another nominee. This nominee is organizational. It's not just one person. This nominee is an organization. It's the Environmental Defense Fund. Gosh, they sound like one. They're on our side, don't they? Sure do. I mean, the Environmental Defense Fund? I mean, they're defending the environment, right? I mean, that's got to be they've got to have a movement of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people out there willing to get out there and fight for the environment, and they do. I remember when I was at the Society of Professional Journalists meeting a couple of years ago in Roanoke, Virginia, and the EDF was there, and they were putting on a big shindig. They had a celebrity chef there who was cooking up some tasties, and they were passing out little cards so that the sushi eaters would know which sushi not to eat because it had been overfished and that might be polluted and, you know, not good to the planet to overconsume this kind of stuff. Giving out hats. I've still got my hat. It's a red hat, white letters. It says, just cap it. As in cap and trade. Just cap it.
Cap the damn carbon dioxide. Still got that. Oh, they were there. They had a shoulder-mounted wireless remote camera hovering over top of the celebrity chef as he cooked these delightful tidbits in his very chefly-looking sauté pan. And I think they had aquariums. Or would that be aquaria? Aquaria? Never mind. They had all of that. Must have cost a fortune. And the food was yummy. Since they were in old Virginia, they did something with grits that was real tasty. I think it was grits with a can of Rotel in it and some Velveeta. Whatever it was, it spoke to my Velveeta problem. I was not okay for days. The EDF, Environmental Defense Fund. Well, they got a problem. And their problem's name is Stanley Druckenmiller. Yeah, I know. It sounds like a name straight out of a Bugs Bunny cartoon or something. Yeah, no, Marty, it wasn't Gordon Ramsay. No, they couldn't have afforded Gordon Ramsay, and they wouldn't have allowed that much swearing inside their room. But no, EDF has a real live, honest-to-goodness problem. And the problem's name is Stanley Druckenmiller. Doing some very good work, the folks over at Alternet, alternet.org, partnered with Little Sis, LittleSis.org. You know, get it? Little Sis, big brother, cute. And they investigated these people that they're calling the Bubble Barons. These are the head fund. No wonder we can't get funding. I can't speak. These are the hedge fund managers and so forth that made a killing on the Wall Street debacle. And one of those is Stanley Druckenmiller. He, among other things, I believe he leads Duquesne Capital Partners. Is that it? And Duquesne Capital Partners has about $200 million in Massey stock. Yeah, that Massey. Don Blankenship. Okay, so he does. So what? I mean, you know, hedge fund manager, multi-billionaire, investing in Massey, not giving a rotting rat's ass about people dying in gassy holes in West Virginia. Same. So what? It's what barons do. The only one problem. Like I said, it's an EDF problem. Erectile dysfunction. No. Environmental Defense Fund. It's an EDF problem. Because Stanley Druckenmiller sits, wait for it, on the board of the Environmental Defense Fund. No kidding. And before you say, well, you know, Bob, maybe he dropped that $200 million on Massey before he knew what a bunch of sons of bitches self-made that they were. He bought in at that level, and Massey was one of his company's largest investments to date as of December 2009. He bought in knowing full well what had happened at Aracoma. He bought in knowing full well what the safety record, or non-safety record, was of Massey Energy. He bought in knowing that Don Blankenship is the leading goon among a few others, one of the leading goons in the climate change denialist movement. Oh, yeah. I mean, this is astonishing. Who doesn't know what? But Stanley Druckenmiller is a beloved. And you know what? What do you? The only thing I can say is that, you know, the EDF needs a few emails. Dear EDF, I will not contribute to you until such time as Stanley Druckenmiller is either off your board or until such time as he has sold the $200,000 worth or $200 million worth of Massey stock that he controls and used a significant portion thereof to fund grassroots efforts to end mountaintop removal in Appalachia. Is that fair? I mean, God, yeah, anybody out there, anybody ever read Pogo? We have met the enemy and they is us? The Environmental Defense Fund? I mean, that's one of those big greens, right? I mean, let's just have a look at the little old website. Ah, yes, the Environmental Defense Fund. Finding the ways that work. Countdown to a climate vote. Turn up the heat for action. Senate and House introduce policy proposals to reform toxic chemicals policy. Abundant fish populations mean plentiful food and economic prosperity. We promote smart management and protection of critical habitat to restore oceans. How you gonna restore the oceans there, Stanley? When you're funding mountaintop removal, the burning of the coal from which pumps tons and tons of mercury into those same oceans that your EDF is out there protecting. Pollution and toxic chemicals can take a heavy toll on people's health, particularly on children. We work to reduce or eliminate those threats. Except when one of our board members has $200 million invested in one of the worst corporate polluters on North American soil in American history, but we won't talk about Stanley Druckenmiller on our website because, oh my God, this is a little embarrassing. And then there's the photo, the obligatory photograph of the furry, sad polar bear with her two polar bear cubs nuzzling up against her. Global warming. Stabilizing the Earth's climate is the critical environmental challenge. We use national, regional, and global approaches to preserve life and prosperity, except among the dumb goddamned hillbillies in Appalachia, where a member of our board of directors uses $200 million to exacerbate national, regional, and global climate catastrophes because Massey Energy was a good buy. Oh, dear. How we get results. How do we at EDF change the world? We find new ways to take ideas grounded in science and scale them up to transform entire sectors except the dumb goddamned hillbillies in Appalachia, and they can all go and hurt themselves for all we care because our board member Stanley Druckenmiller has $200 million sunk into Massey Energy and helps contribute to the grim and grisly deaths. It's 29 minutes past the hour, and I'm wondering if it's too early to start drinking. Opium? Thorazine dart? Anything? Anybody? A little help here? Yes, Stanley Druckenmiller went to Bowdoin College, the same place that gave us the Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, hero of Gettysburg. Founder, 1981, Duquesne Capital Management. Well, let's see. Donation, grant recipients, RNC, Republican National State Elections Committee, Campaign contribution. Damn, there's a lot of zeros there. Yeah, I think that's $250,000, one filing, 1996. Draft Bloomberg Joint Fundraising Committee, $250,000, 2008. Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee. Well, you got to hedge your bets a little bit. Campaign contribution, $81,900. I mean, this is bet hedging, okay? DNC non-federal individual contribution, $50,000. Up, John McCain campaign contribution, $34,100. Oh, but look, there he is. Barack Obama campaign contribution, $33,100. Cranky old John beat him by a grand. Republican National Committee campaign contribution, $28,500. Democratic National Committee campaign contribution, $28,500. Oh, this is a cynical bastard. And it goes, and that was just, you know, 8 out of 51 contributions. And frankly, I don't think I've got the nerve to see the numbers 9 through 51. He's part of the Philanthropy 50, Americans who gave the most in 2009. He is number 105 on the 400 richest Americans of 2008. And he has no problem whatsoever owning a vast amount of Massey Energy stock. At the same time that he sits on the board of the Environmental Defense Fund. Oh! Hey, Stanley. I don't know, but what... I think I maybe went to that. I went to that story a little bit too quick. Because I'm not okay now. Ha! Man, my voice almost got as high as Glenn Beck's when he was screaming at that woman to get off his telephone. And then there's Glenn Beck. He's working a new piece of shtick or a new side of the street. We'll have that audio for you later. No, he doesn't. He doesn't want any armed rebellions or anything in the United States. No. Except for, you know, when he does. You know how that goes. You know, but how are you supposed to get anything done when everything is incest? How are you supposed to accomplish anything on this side when we're that infiltrated? My God, they sit down to have a board meeting of the Environmental Defense Fund and Massey Energy. It's Colonel Hogan's coffee pot microphone, the little microphone on Adolf Hitler's in Colonel Klink's office that goes to the coffee pot receiver in the back. And Macy's, whether he knows it or not, tells Gimbals. Well, there's a dated reference. Wow. But it's Moran Monday on the horn, so we can. There's plenty to talk about. Any way you slice it, you know how to reach the program, don't you? I assume you do. Toll free, it's 877-443-2366. That spells 877, the numeral 4, HEADON, head on. 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you want to save us the toll-free charge, you can dial in. If you've got some sort of free long-distance dialing program, you can reach us at 304-658-3333. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. BOBKINCAID. Gosh, I missed you guys. And I think we got 2.5 hours of really good show coming up, so don't go away. Bring your ideas straight away to the table. This is The Horn, America's listener-supported liberal voice. Okay, I'm feeling better. I think I can get away from Stanley Druckenmiller. But by the, I don't know. Have you ever donated to the Environmental Defense Fund? If you have, could you drop them a note and tell them you'll never give them another dime because you just found out about Stanley Druckenmiller? I mean, Jesus. I'm sorry. I'm no good at this triangulating the enemy of my enemy is my friend BS. And by the way, where's the enemy of my enemy in this thing? The Environmental Defense Fund? They didn't know? They had no clue? They didn't ask? God damn, I can't coach Little League without a criminal background check being run on me. And they didn't know he had $200 million worth of holdings in Massey Flippin' Energy? See, I'm doing it again. Hey, I got a funny for you. I'm not going to let this program go this sideways. I got an email earlier today, and I immediately forwarded it on to Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, not because it needed any psychoanalyzing, but because, because it was Texan. And I knew Rick would get a kick out of it. David in Tennessee sent this along to me earlier today. Head ramming dino had gears in skull. Apparently there was a Tea Party movement 50 million years ago. Was it 50 million years ago? 70 to 80 million years ago, there was a teabagging movement, and it was apparently led by a teabagging dinosaur with a knot of bone that meshed with itself about the size of a softball on the top of its skull. And this is a new dinosaur, everybody. This isn't just your ordinary, boring, let's go to the Smithsonian and look at the Tyrannosaurus Rex and take cute pictures of Agnes with her head in its mouth making scary faces, because I've done that. No, this is a brand new dinosaur from 70 to 80 million years ago. It was a plant eater. Yeah, it wasn't a tyrannosaur, you know, running through the jungle, ripping the flesh off. No, it was a plant eater. From Discovery News by Jennifer Viegas, a new species of dinosaur found in Texas. Like I said, see this, I had to send this on to Rick Goodner. A new species of dinosaur found in Texas featured flanges on the side of its skull that may have allowed its skull bones to mesh like gears, a useful feature when it likely rammed heads with other dinosaurs, say researchers. It's possible that this would prevent the skull bones from dislocating under stresses, speculated Nicholas Longrich, a postdoctoral associate in Yale University's Department of Geology and Geophysics, who was project leader for a study about the find published in the latest issue of the journal Cretaceous Research. Damn, I got to get me a subscription to that. I bet the cartoons are just wanted. Oh, shut up, Bob. They named this critter Texacephale langstoni. The Langstoney part is in honor of paleontologist Juan Langston, the great paleontologist. They say that the dinosaur first arose in West Texas, somewhere out in the West Texas town of El Paso, a little bit past Rose's Cantina. Right. Out that a ways. But it's that name, not the Langstoney part. You know, when I first glanced at it, what? Texacephale langostino? What? Served in a buttered garlic sauce, huh? No. Texacephale means hard-headed Texan. There you go. Enough said. Now, see, they couldn't have named it that if it was like somewhere around Austin, you know, the civilized part of Texas, the little island of normalcy and the great teeming red wash of weird. With all apologies and due respect for my Texas friends who are outside Austin, but you live there, you know. That's why you listen to this program, because you ain't got none of that down there. Yep. There's a dinosaur out there now named Hard-Headed Texan. And what's that great line? You can always tell a Texan, you just can't tell him much. Yeah, from the state that gives us... And you know, maybe it goes in both directions, because nobody will ever say that the great Molly Ivins was a limp dish rag, or that Jim Hightower is a doormat. They ain't taking none neither. But I've just got this mental picture in my head of Texacephale Langstoney standing at a teabagging rally with that sign that says homeschoolers, H-O-M-E-S-C-H-O-L-E-R-S, for Perry. Homeschoolers for Perry. Wilma! It's going to be a... I don't know. This could be an interesting evening. Let's go to the phones and see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robert, Kevin from Seoul.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
How you doing?
I'm getting along. How about you?
I'm doing great, man. You know, it's weird. It is so weird. You know, the other day, somebody brought up the issue with the coal miners, how they basically sentenced themselves to death.
Yep.
Hello?
Right here.
Yeah, and, you know, you asked the question, how many of them do have McCain and Palin stickers on their bumpers and are gun owners and who are anti-union?
Right.
That was the comment that was brought up, I believe.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just amazing because, you know, things out here kind of come to a full circle. And the thing is, what I wanted to bring up, do you think a lot of people, a lot of those type of people who know deep down Massey coal mine doesn't work for them, but are so invested in Caucasian privilege that they're willing to risk life and limb to maintain it?
It's you know, well, that's a hard question. The people that working for Massey works for are thrilled to death that Massey's there, and they just see that Don Blankenship's he's a tough businessman. Because you got to be tough with all them greeniacs and tree huggers out there, or they'll put you out of business.
Yeah, but I don't know. To me, being out here where, and you know, I've been out here for over a month now, and I would say. Okay, and you meet all kinds of, because there's a huge expatriate community out here, you know, filled with English, Americans, New Zealanders, South African, interesting mix of people. And, like, the cases that I've run into a fellow American who's most likely Caucasian because I'm the only one who is of color in my district where I'm teaching. The question, especially if it's another male, the question I always ask myself, if we were back in the United States, would he even bother giving me the time of day? Or is it because he's scared and he's in a country where, you know, white privilege or the benefits of being white really doesn't hold much water? You know, that security blanket is gone out here.
Well, I guess in many ways that it is, but I guess in that instance, it's more a Western, you can spot the Westerner as opposed to spot the skin color, right?
Yeah. But literally, they come a lot, especially the male, especially white American males, come here scared to death.
Why?
Because it means, you see, America still has its imperialistic mentality. You know, like the Brits and the Australians, they've been there, done that. So they're not as scared. And it doesn't play into that white privilege.
So American men go over there and they, behold me, for I am an American and I am strong. That?
Kind of. Because my predecessor, who was also, he lived in Brooklyn and he tried to say he was from Brooklyn, but he was really from Georgia somewhere. He didn't finish out his contract. He left after 6 months because he just couldn't really adjust. And me, I haven't found anything yet that disagrees with me here. You know, my biggest obstacle is trying to learn the language, which we all know is another conversation altogether. But still, you know, things make sense and I'm getting along out here. You know, more so than I did living in Florida or Washington.
Well, I'd say, I mean, there's no sidelong glances at your skin color because of your skin color. If anything, it's a sidelong glance because you're obviously a Westerner.
Yeah, that. And there's a sense of fairness out here. And, you know, even in China, okay, I don't necessarily care for the working conditions in China. You know, we've had conversations about that. But as bad as things be in China, okay, or here, I tell you one thing. The Don Blankenships of China would have gotten justice.
Well, you know, it's interesting you would bring that up because if it was proven, yeah, they'd just take him out and shoot him.
And harvest what damaged organs he has and put it on the black market.
And accuse him of being a member of Falun Gong, sure.
Yeah. But, you know, and that's the one thing you can always say about, yeah, they have their problems. Because the thing is, and it's universally Asian, because even though China and South Korea are different countries, this is a universally Asian thing. If you do anything to unbalance the harmony, you're in deep trouble.
Well, is it even? I mean, I'm curious. I mean, obviously you've heard about it, but did it make the news over there? What happened here?
Yeah. It's been all over. It's on the BBC, and they've gone deeper into it. They've gone really deep into Don Blankenship.
Well, there's plenty of places to go. I got more Blankenship news right here in front of me. He's literally a gold mine of just predatory behavior.
Oh yeah.
But the question is does anybody out there want to do anything about it? I guess.
Well, the thing is, because Korea is an industrial powerhouse, they're buying as much coal as they can. But the thing is, they see 20, 30 years down the head, and they're doing as much green economy as they can go, especially in the city I am, Anson. They're heavily invested into it. And, you know, the coal is more of a transition thing, so they can get to that next step.
Yeah, to keep things going until they do get to where they need to be.
Yeah. And the thing is, you have to understand, Korea is a very unique country because the reality is, Korea was a country that really should not have existed. It could have easily been overran by the Chinese, the Russians, the Japanese. To a certain degree, it has been overrun by you, but they're still here, and they still have their culture, which is end all. So it's also like a strategic thing to preserve their national identity. Because to the left of them is China, and to the right of them is Japan, the two giants of Asia. And they're kind of stuck in. They're like the middle child of Asia. And they're trying to get their own identity. So they see, like, energy independence as a sign of strength and, long-term racial independence in many ways. You know, so it's all tied into one big thing here. Because they don't want to be dependent on the Japanese or anything, you know. They can't wait for the day till the U.S. troops get out of here, which I think will be in about 2 or 3 years.
Well, I'm sure they don't say only the deluded would think that the United States military presence in Korea is holding anything off.
No, because Koreans are doing it by themselves, and, you know, to a certain degree, they can't wait until we go so they can do some serious negotiation with the North.
Because that's...
You know, the thing is, Kim Jong-il is a drunken idiot, you know.
By the way, Ron in Raleigh wants to know, Kevin, he says, ask Kevin if that kimchi's agreeing with him yet. That stuff would make a dead man's eyes water. Hoo-wee!
Yeah, actually, I have it every day, and I love it. But then again, there was a large Korean community back in the States where I got used to it.
You know, I love it myself. I really, really do.
It's just I can't have too much of it. I got to balance it out because I got to cook my own food. And the thing is, here, that's more difficult said than done because Korea is one of the few unique places where it's actually cheaper to eat out than it is to cook your own food.
Well, it sounds to me like maybe you need to take in the Tony Bourdain episode on Korea.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I watched that on YouTube.
Yeah.
But you have to kind of, like, balance it out, or else, believe you me, I'll be wearing Pampers.
Jesus, too much information, Kevin.
That's the truth, bro.
All right, man, good hearing from you. I'm glad you're doing well, and I'm glad things are working out.
Okay, bro. Talk to you soon.
All right, take care now.
Okay, bye.
Bye. That's our that's our South Korean correspondent, Kevin, formerly of Brooklyn, with the American take on life on the life expatriate now, and we roll on here, or not? Okay. So, like I said, there's a ton of Blankenship stuff out there now. We're learning more and more and more and more. The question is, you know, who's hearing it? Like Kevin said, they're doing the BBC did a ton of work. You know, come on, who's watching the BBC? And I don't mean any disrespect on this. A lot of us do. I love their work, but you know what? It's probably got lower numbers than Dancing with the Idols. Or whatever. But it is Moran Monday on the horn. And I got to give you one before we go into the break. There was a fairly important Supreme Court case argued in D.C. today. The Supreme Court, including the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, heard arguments over privacy issues. And, you know, this is another one of those classic cases of hard cases make bad law. Comes out of Ontario, California, and it's the story of a SWAT team member who had a pager or some sort of device or some sort of texting device that he was given as part of his SWAT duties, and he used it instead to... Well, not instead. You know, he had to pay his overages and so forth, and he faithfully paid his overages. He wasn't getting anything over on the city or county or state government. But he thinks he has a reasonable right to privacy insofar as at one point they downloaded all of his texts and read them, and lo and behold, what was he doing? What was Officer Friendly doing? Officer Friendly was sending dirty text messages, sexting, in other words, to his wife. Okay. And to his mistress. And that is being held up as an invalid invasion of privacy. And you know what a civil libertarian I am. You know what a jealous guardian of the First Amendment I am. Even I am having a hard time understanding how when you've got, you know, the government radio, for all intents and purposes, and you're using it to send dirty messages to your wife and your mistress, you somehow expect to be private in that. Excuse me? Pardon? And she'll begin to... How can you expect that to remain private? I mean, you're working for somebody, the first words of out of the mouths of whom are usually, you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. And you think you've got a right to privacy? Hey, welcome to the National Security State Officer Friendly. You ain't got no privacy. But arising out of this is one of those great moments in Supreme Court history. You remember how George Bush kind of lost the election to Bill Clinton because he didn't know what a barcode scanner was and didn't know how, to buy a bag of Doritos? And what are you doing there? As the checker passed the barcode over the scanner. Well, I'm checking you out, Mr. President. You can do that? That makes sense. Senator Ted Stevens explaining the internets to all of us. You know, I got an internet today, and you know, you people think it's Well, it's not what it is. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Well, we've got one of those for Moran Monday. And it's an exchange between Chief Justice John Roberts and Fat Tony Scalia. Now, okay, Fat Tony Scalia is a septuagenarian, and, you know, I guess, you know, fascist court members cannot be expected to, you know, be really dialed in on the technology, right? But, well, Chief Justice Roberts is like, what, 52? Chief Justice Roberts is youngish. He should have been there when the word about the inner tubes hit. No, he wasn't. The AP story offers the following. The argument also displayed the limits on the justice's mastery of modern communications devices as Roberts tried to figure out the role of the text messaging service in enabling an exchange between two people. I thought, you know, you push a button, it goes right to the other thing, Roberts said. You mean it doesn't go right to the other thing? Scalia said. The other thing. I thought, you know, you push a button, it goes right to the other thing. You mean it doesn't go right to the other thing? Sweet Jesus, it goes through the series of tubes. Like I said, it's going to be a busy night. It'll be funner if I'm busy talking with you guys, though. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. What we've got here is America's listener-supported liberal voice. What we got here is the horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
This is a public service announcement.
There's a new type of music program coming to the Horn.
We got a letter from the government the other day. Opened it and read it. It said they were suckers.
They wanted me about a summer or whatever. Picture me buying the scam. I said never. But I won't heed the battle call.
Music for liberals. Music for activists. Music with a social conscience.
Down K Street.
The People's Mixtape.
Johnny's dead and Mitch is gone and Kelly have to lose that on the list of dead goes on and I go dead.
Coming soon to the Head On Radio Network.
Now, Paul, Paul, now.
But your flag to gal won't get you into heaven anymore.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Almost 10 minutes past the hour on this Monday edition. Not just any Monday edition, it's Moran Monday on the Horn, by God. And if you want to nominate yourself a Moran, you know the number 877-443-2366, 877, numeral 4, Head On. We've got a number of nominees already in the queue, but you know what? We're not all hoity-toity about things. I certainly don't have a lock on nominating Morans. And you are welcome, by all means, welcome to add your own. Sue, known to many as ELO in the chat room, here are my Moran nods. This one's a twofer. Joe Lieberman and Susan Collins, who as chair and ranking minority member of the Homeland Security Committee, respectively subpoenaed the Obama administration today to get background info on the Fort Hood shooter. Meanwhile, Karl Rove continues to thumb his nose at his two-year-old outstanding subpoena. To say I am livid would be an understatement. Why the Democrats allow Lieberman to continue, A, caucusing with the Democrats, and B, retaining his committee chair after speaking at the Republican National Convention is beyond me. I'm so mad I could chew nails and spit handcuffs. Yeah, you know, the Obama administration, they'll honor the subpoena on what we know about the Fort Hood shooter. How about Joe Wackastack? You think Joe Lieberman and Susan Collins could get around to issuing a subpoena for what we know about Joe Wackastack, who, you know, the right-wing teabagging terrorist who flew a plane into a building a couple of months ago? That guy. Nah. Oh, we... run for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Well, we got more. I got more. Oh, I got more. But right now, let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Juanita.
I sent you an email about a Moran.
Okay.
I've never seen before. I wanted to flesh it out.
Okay. Yeah, I saw the email, and I got to tell you, the name didn't take me anywhere.
Oh, you'll be hearing from him. Well, first of all, I think he's either a clone of Hannity without a soul, and that's pretty bad.
Jason Matera.
Yep. And he's 26, and of course, before he became such an outstanding right winger, he was a jock in college. And he knows the answer to everything. And everybody.
Oh, yeah, he's written, according to the bio you sent me, he's written for the Washington Times, the Washington Examiner, Human Events, National Review Online, and Townhall.com. He's a highly sought-after speaker and an expert on campus activism strategy, born and raised in Brooklyn, where he lives today. Yeah, and his photo looks like a photo for somebody who's looking to get into a relationship on Facebook.
Yep.
That's as gently as I can put it.
Yeah, I agree. I think I know what you're saying. And don't you think he could be a clone of Hannity without a soul?
I absolutely do.
Hannity don't have, his soul is S-O-L-E.
Right, well, you know, he may have had one, but he sold it a long time ago.
Yeah.
And apparently for cheap.
But this guy had a lot of calls against him, and everyone, you're an Obama zombie. That's the name of his book. And, of course, he didn't have that deep a voice. I mean, his voice was all right. But anyway, somebody was talking about having alternative energy. He said, oh, yeah, the wind and the solar, that's a liberal pipe dream. Said, we've got oil, and we've got coal, and we've got nuclear energy. You know, one of them,
Yeah, what this creep is, he's Michelle Malkin's ambush guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he...
And he doesn't even know how to tie a necktie properly, either.
And he said that about global warming, he said, Senator, who's the guy from Oklahoma?
Inhofe.
Yeah. He said he has a list of over 650. That's my saying. It was 600 more than that. 650 scientists who don't agree with global warming.
Well, you know what? I don't agree with global warming. I wish global warming wasn't happening.
This guy was something else. I just can't.
Let me guess. They gave him what? An hour, 2 hours on C-SPAN or something?
I'd say half an hour. From 20 minutes to half an hour.
Well, it's still a half an hour he didn't need.
Yeah.
Maybe he you know what? Maybe he's angling for a gig on the right network, Juanita.
Oh, yeah. He'd be the big star. And he loves the Tea Party. He don't believe in helping anybody.
Well, like I said, I've seen his photograph. He looks like he'd enjoy some teabagging.
Okay, Bob. And
no, that was cheap. I'm sorry.
I've lived long enough to have heard that, Bob, so don't worry about it.
Well, I know, but I stooped. I
know. It's that Southern thing. Or probably something else. Anyway, this one woman, she called in. I love her. She said, all of you right-wingers, she said, you listen to Frank Lutz with your talking point, and you all say the same thing, only you all got different faces. You just say the same thing. And, of course, when she was off it, oh, that is Obama zombie.
Oh, you know, you've picked out my next bumper song for me. Well, I'm not going to tell until I play it. It wouldn't be a surprise then, now would it? But okay. No, you picked out the next song I'm going to play without a doubt. I'm in a DJ kind of mood tonight, Juanita. Uh-huh. But you know, these things like Jason Matera are all over the place because they are well funded.
This one is so obnoxious. You just—he's ugh. He might be Hannity and what's that one that thinks she's so beautiful? Not Ann Coulter, but the other blonde.
How can you tell? Megyn Kelly,
the blonde.
Laura Ingraham.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know the Nazi guard. At a,
yeah,
you know.
Right.
Okay, and I want to tell you something that happened down here in Florida. You may have heard about it, but, and I think they've having it other places, but our Congress here in Florida, they decided to pass this law that would make it easy to get rid of teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it was pretty complicated. Well, the teachers got out and they just demonstrated big time. I don't remember all the details, but it's a pretty bad bill. Well, Chris, he started going out, you know, and everywhere he would go, these people would turn up asking him to veto the bill. Well, you know what? He did a couple of days ago.
And is he a communist now?
Well, he's already been that because, you know, him and Obama hugged each other.
Well, that probably set off commie lights all over the John Birch Society. I'm sorry?
To cap it off, guess who else is involved with that and very disappointed?
Jeb Bush.
Yep.
How did I know?
The governor has alienated. I'm just going to read this one little paragraph. The governor has alienated the Republican elite in the state with his veto of Senate Bill 6, which was pushed by business leaders, the Florida Chamber of Commerce, Florida Committee of 100, and former Governor Jeb Bush's Foundation for Florida's Future. Now, I didn't know about that.
Which probably has figured out to make some money for Neil or Marvin out of the deal with some bogus testing scheme. Scam.
It's all money, you know, Bob. It's all making money. But they get their fingers in the pot all over the place. But what is it to him? He's not in power now.
No. But Charlie Crist has a significant political following in Florida. And I can only guess that Marco Rubio is in Jebby's back pocket.
Oh, yeah.
And what Jebby, always remember, Jebby is the baby brother. Jebby was always raised up through that incredibly dysfunctional psychopathic family of theirs as the smart one.
Yeah.
And Jebby wants the White House. You know, that's why I can't take any of these people. So, you know, Haley Barbour explored run of the presidency. Rick Perry of Texas is being touted as a likely contender for the Republican nomination in 2012. Sarah Palin's already buying her inauguration gowns. You know, I can't take 10 cents of that worth of that seriously, Juanita, because I know the psychopathology of the Bush family. And I know that as long as Jebby Bush is not president of the United States, he's going to have to continue to sit at the children's table at Thanksgiving and get noogies from W. You mark my words, because he will be too old in 2016 to run for president. This is it. He will be in the race. Now, I feel a little Limbaugh-esque about that, the way he used to talk about Hillary and stuff.
You hear a little bit of his name being added to the mix, don't you?
Yeah, well,
where you look.
Yeah, they don't go away. You know, the Bush family is like a, well, how do I do this genteelly? I don't want to upset your sensibilities. the Bush family is like a rash that you can't get rid of.
Yeah.
And
I know it. That's a good way to put it.
Well, I could have put it more coarsely, but I'm trying real hard here, Juanita. But they are.
A little boy now.
And as long
Grandpa.
Yeah, I know. I got the white hair to prove it to you. Know, I used to be a luscious blonde. Now I'm just a white-headed lush.
Okay,
that's a joke. But no, seriously, Jebby is not a day goes by. He can't look at himself in the mirror to shave, but to think, I'm the one that didn't get to be president.
Yeah.
I've got to be president. I won't be any. Daddy was a president. That idiot brother of mine was a president. I got to be president. And he's only got one throw of the rock. And that is 2012. So all of this posturing and other malarkey, I got nothing in it. So Jebby has to get rid of Charlie Crist.
Uh-huh.
And by get rid of, I mean make him absolutely politically irrelevant and get him out of that arena.
Well, have you heard what he's thinking about doing, Chris?
Which part?
Running as an independent.
Well, see, that would be a smart teabagging move.
It sure will.
Because, you know, the teabagger's like, oh, we ain't Republicans, we're independents.
Yeah, they ain't gonna vote for Charlie Crist because he hugged Obama.
Well, when's the primary?
I don't know. I really don't know. When the primary is.
I mean, the Florida primary, I mean, it hadn't happened
yet.
He's still running against Rubio for the nomination, yeah, for the Senate race, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's come out with some pretty bad ads against Rubio, too. And Rubio, the only response he has is that it's lies.
Yeah, exactly. And see, what you've got here, you know what a stalking horse is, Juanita.
No.
Well, a stalking horse is the horse that the racehorse, you know, kind of follows. And,
oh,
and all these other candidates are stalking horses for Jebby Bush. And as far as Crist is concerned, you know, David in Tennessee noting, he said, Jebby will drop the gay dime on Charlie in a minute. Wait and watch.
Yeah.
Because, remember, that's how Bushes operate. You know,
yeah,
the Bush family, it was George W. Bush who ran that push-pull campaign in South Carolina. That, did you know John McCain has a little Negro baby?
Yeah.
They did that. That's how they operate. That's the kind of sleaze merchants that they are.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, no, the, like David in Tennessee says, wait and watch.
This, I was going to say a little bit about what was in that bill. It was, it would have tied future salary increases to student test performance. Would have ended tenure for new teachers and would not have considered a teacher's advanced education or experience.
So in other words, if a teacher in Florida was barely literate but was politically connected, that would be all you needed. Whereas if you were a master's degree or PhD holding educator who was in there doing a bang up job with the students, and you had 25 years experience in, that wouldn't save your butt if some right winger, you know what? He said creation didn't happen in 7 days. I want him out.
Well, that's the bill's goal, is to reward the state's best teachers and make it easier to get rid of the bad ones. Well, what do they call the best teachers, right? What you're saying.
Yeah. And plus, since it's tied to test scores, of course, I'm sure that there is some sort of dodge built into it, really, to get the Marvin or who Neil,
yeah,
a little something something.
Yeah.
Because remember, the Neil, I think it is the Bush that's into the testing racket.
One of him or the other one, yeah. I think it is Neil. Well, you know, they were also into the guards over in Iraq, you know, and other places. Did you know that?
They're into everything.
I know.
They're like a rash you can't get rid of.
They're in the funeral parlors. I mean, that's an old word, ain't it?
Yeah, well, yes, but
you don't hear that often, do you?
Parlor? No, not so much, but
when I was young, that's what they called it.
I know. It was a funeral parlor, and it was a beauty parlor, and parlors, sure.
Yeah.
Which I find funny because I think the etymology of the word parlor is from the French parle, which is to speak. And we all know, you know, not a lot of talking going on in a funeral home.
No.
But, you know, a parlor was a speaking room.
Oh, well, we borrowed a lot of words from the French.
Yes, we did.
And a lot of people don't know it, just like what Bush and Entrepreneur, I can't pronounce.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know the problem with the French language, it doesn't have a word for entrepreneur.
Oh, Lord.
Makes my head hurt, Juanita. It really does.
I know it. And, oh, I know what I wanted to say, too, is I've heard a lot of things being said on MSNBC about Blankenship. I mean, they're calling him out. And it's not just Rachel, and it's not just, also the Young Turks, Cenk, he's really told a lot of stuff about him. And he told something, I'm sure you've talked about it too, but about these two men being burned to death.
Yeah.
In one of his mines. And then he goes out.
Yeah, that's the Aracoma mine. That's 2006.
And then he goes out and, it's a safe. You know how safe it is and all. But anyway, Cenk Uygur on the Young Turks is really telling a lot. I mean, he goes into a lot of details about it. So I don't know about the other stations, you know. At all, I doubt.
Well, I'm glad that Cenk's doing it, though. I mean,
he's really, he knows, you know, he keeps up with stuff. And for him to be from, you know, not raised in this country when he was little, he's got a lot, you know, sometimes he'll hear something and say, where did that come from? It's kind of like a cultural thing.
Yeah.
But he's very knowledgeable. He's a brilliant, brilliant guy, and he's probably next to you. He's my favorite.
Oh, bless your heart.
I like you young guys that are informed.
Young guy. Oh, she shoots. She scores and gets her own rebound and puts it back. You young guys.
Well, yeah, to me, you're young. You're my son's age, so you're young to me. You're one of my little boys.
Hey, Juanita, I'm going to roll along, but we'll talk soon, okay?
Okay, you take care.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
See, I don't want to say things in conversation with Juanita because, well, you know, it's how I was raised. But, no, the Bush family is like a dose of the clap that you can't get rid of. It just goes away, and it makes you hurt real bad, and eventually it drives you crazy. You know, if you look at Daddy Bush and you look at George Bush, and then you contemplate the notion of a third Bush presidency, it's like tertiary syphilis, and you just kind of stand there and you're sort of motorized and going through the motions and watching your country die and stuff. Oh dear, and we wonder why I'm not on terrestrial radio. I just compared the Bush family to tertiary syphilis. Oh well, what are you gonna do? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to keep going. I'm going to go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, Bob, believe it or not, you've got Dave.
Hey, Dave, how are you?
Well, I'm doing rather well, but I'm no longer able to even listen to my friend Bob Kincaid unless I just dial and hope that you leave me on hold for a little while I get to hear you. That can no longer get you on the Internet. I'm switching the ISP to another one to see what that does, but one thing after another. I'm no kind of a real expert on these computers, but I do believe we're being messed with again. I suppose I should feel honored that I have been given so much attention. My God, if I were a terrorist trying to sell nuclear weapons to the Chinese or something, maybe it would make sense. But I'm just the humble guy who calls radio talk shows and write letters to the editor, and that seems to be even worse for the Patriot Act troopers. They don't like that. Anyway, how have you been doing, my friend?
Doing pretty good. We had a hard week's work last week up in Pittsburgh, but we did a lot of good things, and like I said, created a little vision of what can be. But I'm just tickled. I'm tickled to death to be back behind the microphone and doing what I love to do better than anything else.
Well, you were missed. You were missed.
Well, I appreciate that.
Well,
getting a question here. Who is your ISP, Dave?
Well, here it was called RennieNet. Now I'm switching over to what was Juno. It's also Net Zero, and they're sending me.
So it's all dial up.
Well, it hasn't been. Up until now, I've been on the high-speed of the DSL.
Very interesting.
I think the Juno is going to be on supposedly a high-speed dial-up. I suspect it's going to be slow, but I don't need to rush. I need to take my time and get to where I want to go.
Well, you know, we've got a stream that you can listen. Anybody can listen to on dial-up. It's we've tested it. It works with dial-up. So if you just go to the headonradionetwork.com website and look for the dial-up stream under the Listen Live button, it'll be right there for you.
By God, I will do that. I will be back as a regular listener and not have to dial up and be put on hold in order to get to hear you. You're still doing a wonderful thing, my friend.
Well, thank you, Dave. I really appreciate it. You've been with us for a long time, and those are mighty kind words.
Yeah, I ran across our old friend Mark Levine there for a short time. He was covering, I guess, for Mike Malone, and you were a guest with him there.
For Leslie Marshall.
Leslie Marshall, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed.
Right. Well,
Dave, take care, and I hope we will talk soon, and I hope you'll get your connections worked out.
I'll know what you're talking about. I won't have to come in and try to BS my way into it.
All right, you take care, Dave.
Take care of yourself, Bob.
Bye now. And moving on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, let me see. A couple of things. First of all, they were yammering on MSNBC about the possibility of Crist going as an independent, and they were opining about, well, this won't do any good because he'll just caucus with the Republicans, and so the Republicans won't have anything to do with him, and he'll lose and all this jazz. Has it ever occurred to these yahoos that Chris could throw a real monkey wrench into the works by saying, guys, elect me, I'll caucus with the Dems?
Well, no, he could. No, look, here's the way. I mean, frankly, I'm happy if he runs as an independent in November against Rubio, because there's nobody that would vote for Charlie Crist or Marco Rubio who might be contemplating voting for the Democratic nominee. This, you know, that's just vote. That's just plain old-fashioned garden variety vote splitting, which works out to the guy whose name I can't remember's the advantage.
Well, you see, the thing is, the guy down in Florida is really weak, the Democrat. I mean,
he's a progressive Hispanic former mayor of Miami, right?
No.
Yeah.
Not according to what they were talking about. He's a African American.
Wow, I've got the wrong memo.
His name is Weeks.
Okay.
I think. Anyway, but they came right out and said, you know, hey, and this was Cornison was saying this. He was saying he's basically a weak candidate. But he was saying, you know, like you said, they want the vote split. But let's face it, Crist can't be any worse than Lieberman.
Kendrick Meek.
Yeah. He can't be any worse than Lieberman.
Who? No, Crist? No. No. Well, not sure.
So why not throw a real monkey word? Wrench into the works, say, you guys elect, guys in Florida elect me, and I'll caucus with the Democrats, thereby throwing everybody into disarray, but especially the Republicans, who spit it, who spat on him.
Right, exactly. So, I don't know, it could be very interesting.
The ultimate revenge, you know. I think it would be a...
But this will. I think the bottom line on that is that it'll be a sleaze fest, and it'll be manipulated behind the scenes by, of course, the Bush family.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have to agree with you that
to the best of my knowledge, Noel's not having any cocaine problems right now, so they'll have a good laser beam focus on it. And their son's not doing donuts in anybody's yards. You know, it should work out.
Yeah, my scenario was basically a pipe dream. But it would be such a fun pipe dream, because can you imagine the right-wing heads popping all over the country when they woke up one day and found out Chris...
Oh, Michelle Bachmann's head would explode.
I just love it. And,
I like it. I like the idea of two Republicans forming a circular firing squad.
Sure. You know, shoot at yourself, shoot at each other all you want, guys. You have my blessing.
I mean, it's geometrically challenging, but, I trust him to get it done.
Yeah. About Blankenship, there is so much crap coming out about him.
Which part? I mean, I didn't mention this, but you know that... Massey as a whole is on federal criminal probation, right?
Yeah.
You do know that. Okay.
And almost every time I go up to Huffington Post, there is a new article, not an update, a completely new article about something else Massey's done or Blankenship's done or something. And it's like the whole ant's nest is being turned.
Well, I mean, all you got to do, Susan, is do some. I don't mean you. The Blankenship has been creating a body of work. I mean, he's like a toxic poet or something. There's stuff to work with there, and it's like all of a sudden he's been discovered. When I knew that he was, and Horn listeners knew that he was a sleaze bag years ago. And now that 29 miners are dead, the rest of the country is seeing fit to notice too. And it's a hell of a trade. You know what? I'd rather have the 29 miners alive, even if they were Massey miners. I'd rather have them alive and in the loving arms of their family.
Even if they were probably fuckers.
Well, who knows? I mean, look, I mean, there's a history there. And I learned a lot of it in the past week. The last organizing effort at that Upper Big Branch mine, it begins with card signing. And 70% of the workforce at Upper Big Branch signed cards saying they wanted to be members of the United Mine Workers of America. Okay, 70%. So it starts out that way, and the guy to really explain this process would be Wayne, but I don't know if he's available this evening, or he can correct me if I get it wrong. So, and that's where the Employee Free Choice Act comes in and becomes so very important, because if that had merely
right then
there would have been a union, right then under the Employee Free Choice Act, but
as it is now, Blankenship got a chance to go in and say, guys.
Well, no. It's not just that. It's the fact that the playing field is not level, because then the unit, after you've had that successful card signing, I think it's something like a year, Susan, that the company then has to bargain in good faith.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's after you've voted an election in. But anyway, between the time that the cards are signed. At the organizing campaign, and the time that the vote is taken, the employer can literally do what he wishes to the employees. And in fact, a couple of years ago in the state legislature of West Virginia, we tried to get a bill through that would say that any worker has a right to walk out of these meetings, these so-called compulsory employer meetings, as a function of his First Amendment rights. and we couldn't get it passed. And you know what? That was a really forward-thinking piece of legislation, because that legislation doesn't exist in many states, if any, where you can get up and walk out of one of these anti-union meetings that your employer puts on. So Don Blankenship, and you know, this is another one of those things. You can bet your last dollar, Susan, that when Don Blankenship went down in that mine, and he did, that every piece of ventilating equipment was working with perfect machined precision.
Oh, yeah.
That the dust and the methane levels were next to nothing. And he went in, and he went up to, you know, he'd go up to a guy doing roof bolting. And say, son, stop work there for a minute. Let's just you and me talk down here. It's just us men in the mine. Now, I don't know if you signed one of them cards, son, but I need to explain something to you. You got a nice house, don't you? And you like being able to do for your wife. And you like being able to buy nice clothes for your children for going to school, don't you, son? You do, don't you? Mm-hmm. Well, let me explain you something. If you go in there and you vote for that union, I'm shutting this mine down. I will not have a union mine. I'm going to shut it down. And then you won't be able to make that car, that truck payment. And you won't be able to make that house payment. And your kids, you'll go on the welfare, and your children will wear whatever they got there to the Goodwill. That's what I'll do. So you just need to remember that. And he did that, Susan, and every last bit of it is illegal. Illegal as hell. Illegal as sin. He did it. And then, when that was over with, that was the bad cop part, and then he played the good cop part, and a few days later, a week or whatever, he said, looky here, when work's over with on Friday, we're going to shut her all down. Everybody going to get on these buses here that I've rented out of the goodness of my heart. And you know what we're going to do? You and your family and you youngins and everything, we's all going to Dollywood. And he did. Loaded up buses and took them to Dollywood. And they came back, and when the election was held, Susan, it went from 70-30 to 50-50. And this is another important part in the inequitable labor laws that presently exist in this country. You know how in baseball they've got that rule, the tie goes to the runner? You know, if you're running for first, you've hit the ball, you're running for first base, and they throw the ball to first base, and the ball reaches the first baseman at the same instant that your foot's landing on the base, there's a rule. Tie goes to the runner. Okay? Well, it ain't that way. Where working people are concerned.
To it more along the lines of the house advantage, as in Vegas.
Well, no, that's not what it is. There was a 50-50 tie. 50% to 50% tie in that union vote. And the tie don't go to the runner.
Yep.
The tie goes to the company. And out of that 20% that changed their vote on the threats of Don Blankenship and a ride to Dollywood, honest to God, I don't know how many of them died.
I don't care. It doesn't matter.
I don't know how many of them died, but I'd be willing to bet one or two of them were people that voted against the union.
Yeah. The least that people outside of West Virginia you can do is check your power company. If you can, convert to wind power and tell them why. Tell them you're not going to be the cause, even indirectly, of any more dead miners. And then call your Congress people.
Yeah, and well, the
and
easiest...
demand criminal proceedings against Massey and Blankenship. And keep calling.
And that's complex in its own right. I probably need to do 45 minutes to an hour just on that issue, because as it stands, the lawsuit is not against Massey Energy. The lawsuits are against Performance Coal.
Mm-hmm.
which is a subsidiary of Massey. And it exists that way because it's a massive shell game in order that's designed to protect Massey's money and the money of those who own Massey. I mean, there's a huge interest in Massey that's owned by this Duquesne Partners or Duquesne whatever it is, this hedge fund. There's oil companies that have big interests, and their money has to be protected at all costs. And you mentioned, you know, looking and finding out if you're connected to it. The easiest way in the world to do that, Susan, is to go to ilovemountains.org.
Yeah.
And there's a widget there. All you got to do is put your zip code in, press the button, and you will find out precisely how you are connected to Mountaintop Removal.
Now, the thing is, with my power company, we were not getting any of our power coal.
Right.
And I couldn't guarantee that wouldn't last.
No, and not only that, coal that is being burned in China is blowing back on you where you are.
Yeah. So what I did was I called up the power company and I says, okay, now, if I switch over to wind, it will stay wind. Cannot switch me back to coal. And she said, yes. Okay, do it. And I told her why.
Very good. Very, very good. Lord knows that is so important. Because we, like it or no, we all really, really do have, there's nobody in this country that doesn't have some chunk of ownership in this. There's no getting around it.
Oh, and Massey is being targeted. Civilly.
Oh, yeah, one lawsuit has already been filed.
Yeah, wrongful death.
Yeah. It was filed by one of the widows, of course. And it's already been tweeted about. I don't know if you're aware of this, but it's been tweeted about by a creep named Nathan Coffey. Nathan Coffey twittered about the lawsuit. Nathan Coffey is the public affairs coordinator of the American Legislative Exchange Council, otherwise known as ALEC. ALEC,
I read it.
ALEC was founded in 1973 by uber-conservative activist Paul Weyrich. It's a front group that writes legislation for the right wing for state legislatures. And among other things, they've coordinated a lot of the deregulation schemes that have plagued this country. It gets its funding from, Cook Industries, Koch, Coke, whoever they are, Walmart, AT&T, Peabody Coal, I don't know about Massey, but there's a lot of coal money in it. So what did Nathan Coffey say when he found out about the lawsuit? He tweeted, "Everyone wants free money. Widow of miner killed in explosion in West Virginia sues owner Massey Energy alleging negligence. Everyone wants free money." I hope he burns in hell.
Like loss of a husband, that's a hell of a price to pay.
Yeah, a widow's mite instead of a lifetime's mate. That's a hell of a trade.
Yeah. I don't know where this guy comes from, but you know, he obviously doesn't have a soul, never did have one. And probably, no, I won't say it because I'm probably sure Juanita is listening, and I don't want her to think that I'm not a lady. I'm not, but I don't want her to think I'm not. So I won't say what I'm thinking because it's filthy.
I understood.
But just let it be known that I'm thinking a really awful insult.
Understood. Understood indeed. Okay. Susan,
God.
Good to hear from you, and we will talk soon.
And congratulations on you and Agnes on your latest grandparenthood.
Thank you very kindly. He's a cute little fella.
Enjoy.
We're gonna.
Okay.
Take care, Susan.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. That's News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon, and Can you imagine? Do you have the ability to process that inside your moral mind? Here's this Nathan Coffey, and he's got a good job as a flack. He is a PR fluffer for a right-wing front group. And he lives in D.C. and is very well paid. And he sees news of the first lawsuit being filed. And the only thing he can think about the widow of that miner is that she wants free money. That rotten, evil bastard. Free money. I guess we see now what Nathan Coffey of the American Legislative Exchange Council thinks of the value of a human life. Because she's going to get free money. That means that her beloved husband's life had no value. Now, I find it disgusting to talk about human lives in terms of monetary value. I do. But frankly, the law recognizes that it cannot bring anyone back from the dead. You know, barring certain right-wing judges, there are no zombies in the judicial system. Nor do they have the ability to create them, with the exception of Republican presidents appointing the likes of Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia. But at trial, the court will try to determine the earning power of someone who was wrongfully killed. It is a piss-poor exchange, and it is something the courts recognize that they can never fully compensate. Never fully compensate for the loss of a loved one. For the loss of a lifetime mate. And they will say, to the extent that we can even attempt to compensate, your only hope is money. Because you know what? If this woman could sue to get her husband back, don't you think she wouldn't have asked for a penny? Just give me back my beloved husband. Just give him back. Just turn back the clock and make the explosion not happen, God. But God's not in that business either. And so the court says money is all you can have in exchange for a person who was wrongfully taken from you and from this world. Marlene Griffith has filed suit. And a soulless son of a bitch, self-made, named Nathan Coffey, thinks that she wants free money. How free, Nathan Coffey? How free? But you know what? That's how corporate America thinks. Forget about it, Bob. It's Chinatown. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. This is Sue.
Oh, hey, Sue.
Hey, you know, it's funny that tonight sort of turned back into a discussion on coal. You said when this accident happened that we should watch for the clean coal mantra to kick back up again, and sure enough, it has. The one channel that I'm familiar with where to watch it or watch those ads come regularly is by watching CNN, believe it or not. And within the last week, they have amped up the clean coal ads again. And in the latest one, I can't believe my eyes when I see crap like it. Some bimbo from Arch Coal is on there talking about all the strives of coal technology and how coal fuels America and this and that. And the images that they're showing behind her of coal mining, they're showing the open pit and the fly ash flying everywhere of a mountaintop removal site. I can't believe my eyes. I can't believe what I'm hearing, and I can't believe that they would actually promote mountaintop removal in that manner. I mean, people are like, well, yeah, clean, cheap, efficient coal. It's always been there for us. Yeah, and at the end of these commercials, they show an orange extension cord plug that plugs itself into a piece of coal.
A lump of coal. Yeah.
And that's right about the time I throw up a little bit in my throat, because it sickens me. They're showing, there's all that coal dust flying everywhere. What all is in that? Arsenic? What's all in the fly ashes?
Oh, geez. Well, you know, just think of what's in the ammonium nitrate fuel oil explosive.
Yeah.
Just that by itself. And at one point in time, we caught them, but intrepid volunteers caught them using old World War II munitions for their explosives. I'm not kidding.
Oh, God. Amazing.
Sue, let me take a minute and just share something with you, because this seems appropriate to the conversation we're having. I was in the store last night, and I was down in the dairy section, and I wasn't even paying any attention. I'm on a new yogurt kick. I'm trying to be a good boy. So I had my back turned, and I was just trying. You know what I was doing? I was reading yogurt carton labels to find the yogurt that doesn't have the godforsaken high fructose corn syrup in it, because guess what? All of it does. Or almost, it seems, all of it does. So I had my back turned. I guess I was sort of in an oblique angle. And I was wearing my T-shirt. I don't know. There may be a picture of me wearing it somewhere. It's my favorite T-shirt in the world. I love long-sleeve T-shirts. This thing's sort of a slate blue, and it's got just simple letters across the front. And it says, Stop Mountaintop Removal on the front. And on the back, it says, Save the Endangered Hillbilly. And I hear this voice. And I look up from my yogurt carton. Doodle's standing there with me. And I think she got a little nervous. And I hear this voice that says, You ain't against all coal, are you? And I looked up, and it's this young, reasonably intelligent man wearing a caterpillar hat.
All right.
And I said, Beg pardon? He said, You're just against mountaintop removal. You're not against all coal, are you? Because if you was, you'd be getting my hackles up, because, you know, be wearing a shirt like that and being against coal after I've lost 29 brothers in a hole, and blah, blah, blah.
All right, yeah.
I said, and you know what? My hackles get up in a hurry, too. But I sort of forced back. Maybe I was just tired. But I forced the adrenaline response back to the extent that one humanly possibly can. And I looked at him and I said, My daddy was a coal miner, my grandfather was a coal miner, and my great-grandfather was a coal miner. They worked their asses off so I wouldn't have to be a coal miner. And I'm not. I said, I am opposed and will continue to oppose mountaintop removal, coal extraction, with every ounce in my being, for as long as there is breath in me that mountaintop removal coal has not taken from me. But I come from a tradition of underground mining, and I have respect for it. All of a sudden, dude started calming down. They're not calming down, but he kind of, you know, took a bite. I don't think he did. You know, he had this preconceived notion of what a tree hugger was like.
Right.
You know, I guess I was supposed to just be pawing through a box of granola or something. But, you know, there I was looking at the yogurt after all. And he said, well, you know, I just worry. He said, you know, we lost. He said, I was one of the rescue crews that went in down there. And then I got some respect for him, you know, because that takes guts.
Right.
And I said, well, I'm glad you went in. And I know it must have been hell. And I've talked to some people, and I know what you saw. And he didn't even work for Massey. He was one of the rescue crews that Massey would let in. They wouldn't let the union crew in. But they let other crews in.
Right.
And he said, you're not against all coal? I said, I think we've got to work toward a day when we're not going to be burning it anymore, because there's going to be a day when we're not going to be burning it anymore because there ain't going to be no more of it. And he said, I agree with you. He said, I'm not one of these weirdos. He said, I believe in global warming. I believe we're killing our planet.
Right on.
He said, but you know what? There ain't no other $30 an hour jobs where I live, and I kind of like, well, I like my job. And you know, that's the truth, Sue. That's the honest to God's truth. People who go underground, my grandfather was that way. The newfangled telephone device was out when my grandfather was entering the workforce. And at one point in time, he had some sort of a connection, and he got a job working on the newfangled telephone system. And it paid a lot better money than being in the mines.
Right.
And he hated it. Absolutely despised it. Couldn't get back underground fast enough. It's a job that some people love. I love this job. Who the hell am I? My father loved working on a furnace. Who the hell am I to tell somebody what job they ought to like or dislike? Yeah, this guy was non-union, but he was reasonable. And he went into the mines when he was 22. He'd furthered his education first. Very well spoken. Very smart young man. But he said, well, you just try to remember them 29 men. And I looked at him and I said, son, I'm a broadcaster. I'm a liberal. And I have spent more time in the last 2 weeks thinking about and talking about and creating awareness about those 29 lost lives than all the Rush Limbaughs and Glenn Becks and Hannitys and Savages on this planet.
Right.
And he looked at me and says, I didn't know y'all was like that. I said, good God, man, I'm a West Virginian, first and foremost. I am an Appalachian of the ninth generation. How could I not be? I think you've begun to get a little uncomfortable.
You see, when people like him, you know, he had to hop down off his high horse because he thought that
he was going to give me the coal keeps the lights on lecture.
Right. And you know, it's even talking with a mountaintop removal person shouldn't be that difficult. But when companies like Massey and then amp them up to the point where they're slapping Judy Bonds in the face. Okay. They show up drunk. That one dude with the armpit hair. he just out of my mind. Screaming like a fool. Threatening the young kids that were there.
Oh, God, that June rally last year down at Marsh Fork Elementary where the one drunk bastard was hollering, did you come here in a car?
Yeah.
Well, no, Junior, I came here on my unicycle. How about you? And the crazy preacher talking about Jesus giving us the coal? But, you know, I've said it a million times, Sue. The employee, you know, yes, Massey abuses the environment, abuses communities, and doesn't give a rotten rat's rear end about who it abuses. But among the most abused in the whole scheme of things are its own workers.
That's right. You know, a lot of during the Crandall Canyon collapse, that one got a lot of publicity, even more than the one in West Virginia, because at Crandall Canyon, of course, you know, they had the initial collapse, and then a few days later it collapsed again and killed some of the rescue people.
Right, and I brought that up with that young man.
And on the television, you know, Blankenship kind of played his cards a little bit differently than media whore Bob Murray did. And Bob Murray is, help me out here, Bob. Bob Murray owns, what is the company that Bob Murray owns? Is it Murray Energy?
I think it is.
Yeah. He owns Crandall Canyon Mine, for anyone who might have forgotten. But during that tragedy, I was watching MSNBC one Saturday morning, And throughout this whole thing in West Virginia the last couple of weeks, we never saw Bob Murray apart from giving a brief interview to that John Roberts idiot from CNN and Diane Sawyer from ABC. We never really saw him do off-the-cuff live shots like Bob Murray did at Crandall Canyon.
Oh, no, there was some serious management going on.
Right. I think maybe they kind of did it that way because of the way Murray managed to foul things up. But I remember watching it one Saturday morning, Bob Murray at the Crandall Canyon thing, and he was talking to that Contessa Brewer, and I can't stand her either. She was asking him questions about it, and he says, well, you know, a lot of these violations that the media is always citing that we've had this many violations and this and that, and this, you know, you make it sound worse than it is because we can get cited for a violation if we don't have enough toilet paper in an underground bathroom. And I'm sitting here just about ready to explode. You son of a bitch, do you really want us, expect us to believe that the majority of your violations were for insufficient toilet paper?
It's all, you know, they are absolutely fixated. I mean, like 2-year-old fixated, Sue, on underground toilets. Because it's always not enough toilet paper in the toilet, and if it's not that, it's there was some coal dust on the toilet seat, and that's where the violations came from. Or sometimes, if they're feeling frisky, it'll be we had some coal dust in the bathhouse where the miners were taking their showers after work. But they won't tell you, well, we had some violations that it was because we were inappropriately ventilating the mine and people could have died and explosions could have happened. They never say that because that doesn't exist in their world unless they get caught doing it. I mean, a heads up for everybody listening, and I don't even like saying this, Sue, but guess what? There's every likelihood in the world that there's another one of these coming. Because Massey has an underground operation in Kentucky that had as many violations from January to now as Upper Big Branch had in an entire year. Now, if that's not sobering, I don't know what is.
Well, sure, and the whole thing is that, you know, I hate it when people, it's a tragedy, just such a tragedy. Yeah, it's tragic for the families that have lost people, but to anyone else, to anyone and everyone else, it's murder. Because when do you stop calling it a tragedy and start calling it a pattern?
Right. Well, it's like it's
premeditated murder.
Yeah, and you know, you were kind enough to hang up something on the Head On Radio Network website for me. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a wanted poster out there now. And, you know, I encourage, and I think the link to it is there, too. You can print it in any format, any size you want. It is a Don Blankenship wanted poster. And it's not wanted dead or alive. We're not like that. And neither are the people who put this poster together. It is simply wanted for the murder of 29 miners, Don Blankenship, to be tried by a jury of minors. And the thing is, there's got to be some level of justice. I had an email from our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, from over at OsborneInc.com this morning, talking about the fact that I guess the prosecuting attorney of Raleigh County has said that she is open to a homicide prosecution for Massey. Her name is Kristen Keller, and she told the Corporate Crime Reporter last week, quote, "If there is evidence to support a homicide prosecution, I would not hesitate to prosecute." Well, remember, lawyers are masters at weasel speak. If there is evidence to support a homicide prosecution, not a murder prosecution. Murder is a subspecies of homicide. Homicide includes voluntary and involuntary manslaughter as well. But that's if there is evidence. And here's the trick. Those shell corporations exist for a reason. And everything will be hung out on performance coal.
Right.
And she might even find some mine foreman who didn't get killed that Massey will help her hang out to dry and blame for this.
Right.
Because that's what they did with the Aracoma fire. They found some poor working stiff and hung him out to dry when there's a memo out there that shows that Don Blankenship himself was micromanaging every aspect of the operation of that Aracoma mine. And see, the United States Department of Justice declined to pursue Massey any further than they did because they said there wasn't enough evidence. So when Kristen Keller says, if there's evidence to say, in other words, what she's saying is, it ain't going to happen. And besides, just having read a little bit about her, Kristen Keller is the Marcia Clark of Raleigh County, West Virginia.
Oh, that's lovely. How nice for you guys. Yeah, I wonder how many more is it going to take before the Secretary of State, I understand that they're all bought and sold coal company whores down there, but how many more is it going to take before Secretary of State's office in West Virginia starts pulling charters?
Oh, that will not happen.
It should.
The Secretary of State is an elected position, and it is seen as the elected position that leads to the governor's office. There's a constitutional creature in West Virginia called the Board of Public Works. It consists of the Secretary of State, the Treasurer, the Governor, the Attorney General, and the state auditor. And those are the bigs. And the Secretary of State ain't pulling no charter and probably doesn't have legal recourse to do so, because as long as you've paid your dues, you're good to go. But no, the fact of the matter is, Kristen Keller couldn't prosecute a berry stained thief in a pie factory.
Yay.
Yeah. You know, if anything is going to happen, it's going to be a very complex prosecution, and it will have to be managed out of D.C., out of the Holder Department of Justice, and no part, no person, no entity, no individual who has anything to do at all or any tangential connections to West Virginia should be allowed to be a part of the process. I'm talking about a judicial system in this state. You've seen the Untouchables, the version with Kevin Costner and Robert De Niro.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're at the end of the thing and it turns out the jury's bought.
Right.
That's the judicial system in this state. Everyone and everything is corrupt. I think we've got some federal judges who aren't. I would trust Federal Judge Chambers, I would trust him to hear this. I might trust Judge Copenhaver to hear this. He's another federal judge. But any elected state judge, anything Kristen Keller could bring in state court would be a joke.
And, you know, that's the ultimate slap in the face in all of this, because, you know, we hear about corporate personhood, and even recently the Supreme Court upheld that, you know, corporations can spend just like anyone else when it comes to getting their elected representatives elected, you know? And, You gotta wonder if we're going to recognize companies and corporations as individuals, when do all the rights apply? Because it's not just they are free to do this and they are free to do that. They are also they're also limited in their freedoms, in as much as you are not allowed to purposely neglect someone and cause their death, and you are not allowed, you know, there's a whole bunch of things that you're not allowed to do. When does it apply across the board and not just things that you can do?
Well, and see, that's like what happened with the criminal prosecution against Massey for the Aracoma fire. They were found criminally liable for what happened, and they paid a fine that was at the time one of the largest criminal fines ever levied, but it's still was bargained down from Nexton from a much higher figure. And they were put on, and Massey Energy was put on criminal probation. As you and I speak right now, Sue, Massey Energy is on criminal probation. And, you know, we've all watched Cops, right? You know, bad boys, all of that. And the cops come to the door in the middle of the night, and there's a guy in a wife beater T-shirt holding a can of Budweiser. Son, aren't you on probation? Well, yeah. Well, you're not allowed to have that beer you got in your hand. Let's go. And they and you violate him and back to the clink to serve out the remainder of his sentence. That's what happens when you break probation. Well, Massey's on probation, but guess what? The U.S. attorneys, and that's what this is what I mean when I say that that nobody in West Virginia can be allowed anywhere near this prosecution if it was ever to even take place. The U.S. attorneys who crafted that deal crafted the probation for Massey so narrowly that the only way they could violate their probation would be to have something happen at the Aracoma mine. In other words, 29 miners could be blown to hell at Upper Big Branch, and it wouldn't violate Massey's probation. So the only thing that Massey had to do was make sure that they've jumped through all the hoops at Aracoma, and everything else was business as usual.
Well, you know, see, and that's the biggest load of crap, because if you're convicted of it, and you're put on, if you're put on probation in the state of Ohio, which is where I am, and let's say that I'm on probation in the state of Ohio, and I go out to Minnesota, and I'm caught out there drinking some beer and that, I am every bit as guilty of violating probation.
You're damn right.
Yeah.
You know, it's like saying to a guy, okay, it will be a violation of your probation to drink beer but not wine.
Right.
Or to drink hard liquor but not beer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this should be a probation revocation right now. But by the same token, using that same sort of weasel language that Kristen Keller did, the U.S. attorneys in the Aracoma case determined that there was not sufficient evidence to pursue individual members of Massey Management, even though they had the smoking gun memo in their hands with Don Blankenship's signature on it. If anyone asks you to do anything but run coal, you run coal. If anybody asks you to build ventilation or whatever, that list of things that go into keeping miners alive, he said, you run coal. Now, that is a reckless disregard for human life. That is voluntary manslaughter. That is 1 year's prison time in the state of West Virginia.
If we had justice.
And the only thing that makes me nervous is we have an attorney general who was specifically involved in the art of keeping corporate heads, real human beings, out of the clink.
Well, yeah, because this whole Goldman Sachs thing is going to be interesting to see how it plays out. You know, a lot of people are rubbing their hands together. Oh, this should be good. This should be good. Ain't nothing going to happen. No one's going to jail.
Because, you know, the good people out there that run coal companies and things like that, we can't have them going to prison.
Of course not.
You know, they're good people. They, you know, they just make mistakes.
They're not only good people, Bob. They're better than us. That's what we
get. This is Orwellian. This is Animal Farm stuff. This is all pigs are equal, but some pigs are more equal than other pigs.
Yep.
Which reminds me, I got to buy a copy of Animal. I got to buy 3 copies of Animal Farm and pass them out to Doodle, Ferg, and Margie. Quiz on Friday.
Right on. So yeah, I didn't mean to hijack your.
You didn't hijack nothing.
I saw that commercial and it's like, damn, Bob was right. You know, there it is. And then I saw him, you know, just openly showing the pictures of the dust flying everywhere, and you know what I really wish people would understand is when they see these trucks driving around in that clean coal commercial, when they see these trucks driving around and picking up all that dust, apart from the environmental damage, where you see that truck driving, That's inside a mountain.
Yeah, with an underground mine underneath it. You know, the guy I was talking to in the yogurt aisle said to me the other day, he said, there's a mountaintop removal job on top of where I'm working. And he said, when they're blasting, they ruin my day. So he can feel it. The rooftop over him moves when they blast.
Well, that's only going to be a matter of time, too, before that ends up coming to, you know, mine subsidence doesn't just take place 20 years after these mines have been abandoned. It happens in real time. But, I forget what I was going to say. But it's only going to be a matter of time before that poor guy is a victim of his circumstance doing that. They're going to make sure. I really hate to say it about companies and that, you know, would so flagrantly thumb their nose at someone else's safety. But you know there's no doubt about it. They just don't care if these people are killed inside these mines or not. They just don't care. It's all about profit. I'll never understand it. I'll never understand. And then you got that bimbo from Arch Coal talking in that Clean Coal commercial about...
Yeah, well, and remember, while we talk about this criminal process, and I try to get it across how filthy, corrupt the judicial system is in this state, remember, Sue, that woman who hit Judy Bonds in the head? $100 fine, no jail. The man who threatened to slit the throat of a father and his son? Fine. And no jail. You know, David in Tennessee asking me, let me get this straight. A Bubba killing another Bubba with a beer mug in a local bar is more likely to pull a year than any Massey functionary, right? Yeah, right. But the addendum is that if the guy who does the killing is a Massey employee and he does it to a tree hugger, there won't even be any jail time for that.
Right. And I gotta tell you that the sort of sinking feeling that I felt when you said Holder Justice Department, it was like, you were talking about the Holder Justice Department. It's like, yeah. You guys are screwed.
And yet, on top of this, you know, you and Matt Osborne both sent me the link. Barack Obama's going to come here to deliver a eulogy for the miners in Beckley. And I understand the impulse that's behind that. And it's a good impulse, and it's a right impulse. And there's just, maybe I'm so cynical I need to take a 2-week vacation or something. But I just read that story, and I went, oh, no. Because I'm sure the Westboro Baptist crowd will come back.
Oh, yeah.
And there'll probably be some birthers outside.
It's going to be an interesting Sunday.
And the thing is, they're still going to hate him.
Right.
It's the right thing. Don't get me wrong, Sue. It's the right thing for Barack Obama and Joe Biden to do. It is the absolute right thing to do. But I guarantee you, you know, it's a little late in the news cycle, but if anybody wants to take one for the team and listen to Rush or Beck or any of the Hannity or any of the freaks tomorrow, you and I both know what's going to be said, don't we? Barack Obama, in a cynical attempt to curry favor in a state that he lost in 2008, is going to deliver the eulogy... blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. He'll never curry favor.
And you know what? Here's my cynical moment. They're still going to hate him.
Right.
Because he's black.
Right. That's why he can drop that, you're the Saudi Arabia of coal slogan any time now. You can just drop it any time, Mr. President, because they're not buying it.
Oh, my God. You and David from Tennessee apparently have a thing going on here. Because I just got a note from David saying, oh, Lordy, if Barack Obama works in the Saudi Arabia of coal, arg. And that hit my screen the very same moment you said it, so we know it wasn't a function of the delay.
Well, then I should probably say hi to David and let you go ahead. But yeah, I don't know. Apart from, I'm glad that you ran into that dude looking for the yogurt of all things. I'm glad you ran into that dude because it starts with one, you know. At least he was sensible enough to talk to and reason with and have a conversation with. And if he was that way with you, maybe he can be that way with the miners he works with day in, day out.
Maybe. You know, I just sat there and I'm ashamed of myself. I'm ashamed of myself, but I don't think I'd catch too much hell for saying this. I looked at that young man, good looking young man, in his mid-20s, whole life ahead of him, apparently doing the right thing by himself. And I just looked at him and I thought, son, I don't want, with all my soul, I don't want to see your picture in the newspaper. I don't want to see it. And I'd give anything if West Virginia had the kind of an economy where he could go somewhere else and make the money he's making and not have to be doing what he's doing. Even if he does love doing it.
Yeah,
because there's somebody out there that's going to want to love him for the rest of his life one of these days, if she doesn't already.
You know, if we could stop this mountaintop removal, maybe he could find work as a mountain tour guide for your tourism industry down there and be just as happy working on top of the mountain.
Or doing reclamation or any, because, you know, well, under my plan, you know, the Kincaid plan that everyone's not talking about. The jobs we create reclaiming the 500 mountains in Appalachia that have been blown to hell, the jobs for which will last two or three generations, are going to pay the same money that young man's getting going underground.
Right.
By the way, David in Tennessee says hi, Sue.
Oh, well, you know, I can't help but thinking that, you know, what about the jobs that because, you know, we don't hear updates about it too often in that, but there was a prison. If I'm not mistaken, there was a prison in West Virginia built on top of one of the mountaintop removal sites, and you guys have nicknamed it Sink Sink.
Sink Sink. That's in Kentucky, actually, but yeah.
Oh, it's in Kentucky. Okay.
Yeah, they can't get it's a prison that they can't get the doors to close in. You know, a prison where you can't close the doors, that's really not a prison anymore.
Right.
it's strictly voluntary at that point.
I mean, go on and stay while you feel real good. Go on home. But, you know, there'll be jobs trying to keep places like that going that could pay $30 an hour. There's no reason for it not to. It's just, as a nation, we need to get reprioritized. You know, I want to say one thing real quick, and then I'll leave you be. I was thinking the other day about gas prices, that report that came out last week about it was the leading up to tax day, and it was GE and Exxon and places like that, you know, the big mega corporations that made, you know, $20 billion in profits or something like that last year, and they didn't pay any taxes at all, and companies like GE got back like $1.7 billion in a tax refund, crap like that. And I was thinking, you know, because the one with the oil company kind of struck me, and it's like, you know, gas prices are heading back up for the summer here, you know, all over the nation. Gas prices are heading back up, and it's like, you know, does everyone remember when I was a kid, when you were a kid, you couldn't go to the gas station and pump your own gas. There was an attendant to come out and pumped it for you.
Yeah, had a job doing that.
Right, and it's still that way in some states, like New Jersey and Oregon. There's a few states where it's against the law for you to get out of your vehicle and pump your own gas. Someone else has to do it for you. And that was the line that we were fed then, that if you would just get out of your car and pump your own gas, we could hold your prices down. And it's not done nothing. But by God, they've hired you now to do their job for them. When is America going to dummy up?
Or undummy?
Right. I mean, how many more miners do we need to have murdered? Because all this blood is on all of our hands. How many more is it going to take before we finally stomp our feet?
And you know, the hard answer to that, Sue, is there may not be any sort of quantifiable number, for the simple reason that as long as the Stanley Druckenmillers of this world sit on the board of the Environmental Defense Fund while they're pumping $200 million into Massey Energy, we ain't going nowhere.
Right.
Aren't I just a little ray of sunshine tonight?
Well, I mean, there's nothing happy in any of this because as we sit here right now talking about it, and the president and vice president are preparing their eulogies for Sunday, your family, you and your family and your brand new grandbaby are being poisoned just by where you live.
Yeah.
There's no more happy days. Let's all hold hands and skip along the picket fence and go get some ice cream. This is serious. People are dying. We knew it all along. People were dying. But when is enough enough?
Or maybe the harder question where Appalachia is concerned, Sue, when does it start to matter?
Right. And that really is when I talk to people about the horrors of coal mining in West Virginia, I just remind them, you know, you're down there, they are every bit as American as we are. You know, you like to wave your little American flag, but guess what? They're every bit as American as you are, but you're not treating them that way. You're treating them like the camel effers or.
Yeah, and you know, David in Tennessee adding another note. We will never undummy, so long as there's Fox News and so forth that have the megaphone that they're willing to fund completely. And again, we're back to the right network. You know, they talk about the millions of people they want to reach. What? Are there not millions? Do they really believe that there aren't millions of liberals in this country? Did they not see the numbers from the November 2008 presidential election of Barack Obama? Did they not see those? Yeah, what is this? What is this? Murdoch hears a who? And we all got to stand on a dandelion seed and scream, "We're here, we're here."
I know. And I hadn't heard about that right network yet, and I was pretty certain that Comcast had just gotten into a bid to take over NBC, part of NBC Universal. And sure enough, they had. Well, then, in the press release, I saw a presser that said Comcast denies having any to do whatsoever with the right channel, and it's like, yeah, bullshit. Yeah.
I know.
We just can't pull that thing, and you know, no matter, you know, it's like Don Blankenship saying, I care deeply about my miners, and Bob Murray too, for that matter. I care deeply about my miners. You stand there and bang your fist all day long.
Well, you know, it says everything in the world when a person is willing to talk about other human beings as my anything. How dare that Abraham Lincoln think he's going to free the slaves? I care deeply about my Negroes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, excuse me, that possessive pronoun, that means something. My miners. Sheesh.
My miners. Now, whatever happened to my countrymen? Because it's not just about the miners.
How about our employees?
True.
You know, it's a corporation, not a personal fiefdom.
Well, that's why when we hear him utter the phrase, my court, my justice, then we'll know.
No, I just want to hear him talking about my sentence.
I want to hear him talking about my appeal as he's being. I'll talk to you later.
Perp walk.
Perp Walker. I'll catch you later, Bob.
See you soon. Bye now. And we'll take a little break. Come back to your phone calls. I just got to get a little swig or something. I'm a little dry. No, it's Tang. Okay, it's Tang. I'm not that frustrated yet. I haven't gotten to Limbaugh land where I'm drinking on the air. Anyway, this is America's listener-supported liberal voice. But you know that. This is the network that you're willing to build and maintain. Because because, you know, our betters won't. This is the horn.
Well, digesting, Reader's Digest, in the back of the dirty bookstore. A plastic flag with gum on the back fell out on the floor. Well, I picked it up and I ran outside, slapped it on the window shield. And if I could see old Betsy Ross, I'd tell her how good I feel. But your flag gal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag gal won't get you into heaven anymore. Well, I went to the bank this morning, and the cashier said to me, if you join the Christmas club, we'll give you 10 of them flags for free. Well, I didn't mess around a bit, I took him up on what he said, and I stuck stickers all over my car and one on my wife's forehead. But your flag gal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag gal won't get you into heaven. Flags I couldn't see, so I ran the car upside a curb, right into a tree. By the time they got a doctor down, I was already dead. And I'll never understand why the man standing in the pearly gates said, but your flag gal won't get you into heaven anymore. We're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag gal won't get you into heaven anymore.
Yeah, neither will your Friends of Coal sticker, for that matter. Or your Massey sticker with the M and the flame coming out of it, like something out of the promo piece for the Lord of the Rings and Mount Doom or some such. Jesus. Let's go to the phones real quick. Or not. See what happens. One of these days, I have a producer. We'll know when people hang up. Please don't get me wrong. It is right and it's proper for President Obama to come down here along with Vice President Biden and eulogize these men. They were men. They were men. They might be called minors, but they were men. They were fathers and brothers and sons and uncles and brothers-in-law. They were men. They weren't a thing. They weren't a minor. And it is right to eulogize these men. But unless there's a lot more decency inside the teabagging crowd than I give them credit for, there will be some creepies there. And there will be lots of Friends of Cole stickers. And we'll and like Sue noted, you know, we'll continue to talk about it as a tragedy instead of, you know, another set piece in an ongoing horror of some 125 years duration. We just lost 29 men. Of those 29 men, they are a part of some 104,000 plus men who died in this process in the last 100 years. 110. Is there any industry, is there any other industry in this country where such numbers would be acceptable? Remember, it took until 1967, 1968 to even make a passing attempt at slowing that death rate down. By the way, they had a little rally in Northern Virginia today, and you'll pardon me for saying that these, you know, that there's a reason I mention this in the same breath as I mention the fact that Barack Obama is still hated here. Cliff Schechter over at Huffington Post writes, In a post titled Dispatch from Guntopia. This morning, on the 15th anniversary of the Oklahoma City mass murder, I drove from Washington, D.C. across the 14th Street Bridge to get on the George Washington Memorial Parkway and attended an open carry gun rally at Fort Hunt, Virginia. Schechter continues, on my way, I passed the Holocaust Museum where a deluded neo-Nazi, in a final act of vengeance for having been born, chose to spray bullets into the flesh and bone of a security guard whose only crime was trying to earn a paycheck. Off in the distance, you could almost see the Pentagon, where John Patrick Bedell wreaked havoc after being declared mentally unfit to possess a firearm by the state of California because he simply bought one with no questions asked at a Nevada gun show. Bell took advantage of the gun show loophole to shoot those serving our country at the Pentagon because of his hatred for it. I'll add the addendum, and he got it via the Memphis, Tennessee Police Department that has to auction guns in order to purchase the necessary supplies with which to equip its officers. So lo and behold, at the open carry rally, who shows up but Mike Vanderbooger Eater? The three percenter, extolling the virtues of gun ownership and screaming his paranoid fantasies on the day that we lost. No, we didn't lose them. We know where they went. We know how they got there. And extolling on the day, the 15th anniversary, I remember exactly where I was when the news began to come out about it, and I just sat there stunned. And this was way back before I ever came back to radio. And I looked at Agnes and I said, my God, they really mean it, these godforsaken Republicans. They aim to take the country down. And so there stands today in Northern Virginia, Mike Vanderbooger.
Now, as they said, my name is Mike Vanderbilt, and I'm a three percenter. George Washington was a three percenter. 3% of the American population of the colonies took the field actively against the king during the Revolution.
It's been about a very simple thing. We will have the freedom and the rights that our fathers paid for. Period. How far we have to go to maintain that commitment is up to the people across the Potomac.
Whenever the legislators endeavor to take away and destroy the property of the people or to reduce them to slavery under arbitrary power, they put themselves into a state of war with the people, who are thereupon absolved from any further obedience.
Thank you.
we are done backing up.
Yeah.
Done. Not one more inch. Now, this is a quintessentially Southern thing, this, oh, hell no. When you hear it, where I come from, you know that somebody's going to get beat, stabbed, or shot. And the guy that takes the beating, the knife blade, or the bullet undoubtedly deserves it. Oh, hell no. For you can push Americans only so far.
Who's going to fire the first shot in the Civil War?
If they're intending to fight it with us, they'll have to fire the first shot. But we will make a resistance such that I think they'll be so irritated with us, they'll finally come to kill us just out of sheer pique.
So you won't go further than bricks?
What?
You won't go further than bricks, despite everything you set up here?
The entire point of the Window War campaign was to get folks' attention and to understand that this thing could very easily go to guns.
Right,
I'm calling on the government to understand that there are going to be consequences to pushing people like us any farther back.
More Ruby Ridges? More Wacos?
Precisely.
Precisely. More Ruby Ridges? More Wacos? Precisely. Who's pushing this freak? Who's pushing him? Where's the shove? There's been more guns and more ammunition sold since the election of Barack Obama in this country than in virtually any other time in this nation's history. Who's pushing them? The answer? You're pushing them. I'm pushing them. By existing. Just by existing. Just by existing. We are pushing them because they have sick, twisted, paranoid fantasies about their guns. That was a declaration of war. That's what that was. And there's plenty of that around here. And let me play something for you. From today's Glenn Beck radio program, just to sort of drive it all home. I think you'll find this interesting. It's especially interesting because he uses this sad sort of televangelist thing that he's got going on as compared to his usual ranting nature. Listen to this. This ain't funny anymore.
Then we went off in this direction. Honestly, I thought others would join in the media. I think they're afraid. Because the truth is so very clear. You are going to be the voice. You must have that same thought in your head. Okay, this isn't what I want to do. This isn't what I planned. I don't want to be this person. But I have a duty. And I'm asking you to put yourself in a mindset that is like the mindset of Martin Luther King. That you
get a bucket. He wants people to put themselves in the mindset of Martin Luther King. I'm going to back this up for a minute because it's too hard, because I just got
it. Put yourself in a mindset that is like the mindset of Martin Luther King.
Because a black president is just like not being able to vote. A black president is just like not being allowed to sit at a lunch counter. A black president for these filthy right-wing goddamn freaks is just like not being able to go to school. It's just like it. It's identical. It's absolutely identical. So he wants his booger-eaten followers to emulate Dr. King.
Isn't what I planned. I don't want to be this person. But I have a duty. And I'm asking you to put yourself in a mindset that is like the mindset of Martin Luther King. That you will join others on the bridges that you may find in your path. And you join arm in arm in peace. And you're
but armed to the teeth.
In the mindset of, they can open the fire hoses on me.
Who's going to open the fire hoses on the teabaggers? I mean, I'm sorry, I meant to let this roll, but honest to Jesus, who's going to open the fire hoses on the teabaggers? It's like Mike Vanderbooger saying he'd been pushed. The only thing that pushed Mike Vanderbooger was the fact that there is now a brown man in the White House, and that has pushed him to the brink of murder. What was that you were saying, Glenn?
You find in your path, and you join arm in arm in peace, and you're in the mindset of, they can open the fire hoses on me. This country, I think, is going to be brought down into violence. I hope to God not, I pray not. It will be possibly the end of the republic if that happens. Dear God, help us.
Who's going to bring it down, Glenn? Who's going to bring it down? This country, I think, is going to be brought down into violence. I hope to God not. I pray not. It will be the end of the republic. Who is going to bring this country down into violence? Not me. I belong to the Kumbaya Society of America. Jesus, as liberals, workaday liberals, we can't even get the big time liberals to understand that we just want to have a forum in which we can talk back to them. That we want space on the public freaking airwaves. Nobody's locking and loading. Nobody's out there, oiling the AK-47. We're liberals. We don't do that. This country, I think, is going to be brought down into violence. I hope to God not. I pray not, he says. That's what he says. But he yearns for it. He aches for it. And frankly, I think he probably masturbates over it. Psychos are like that. Who's gonna pull the trigger, Glenn? It's not gonna be a liberal. We don't do that. But in sitting there talking to his mouth-breathing, drooling, knuckle-walking faithful, telling them, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that, those dumb bastards hear that as code for do that. You know, we don't want to do this. You heard it, you heard Mike Vanderbooger. We don't want to do this, but if they push us, we will. There'll be another Ruby Ridge. There'll be another Waco. I think one of these days they're just going to come and shoot us down out in a fit of pique. They yearn for it. They ache for it. They have a firearm in one hand and their penises in the other. And they orgasm for it. Then again, Glenn Beck doesn't even really believe that this is the United States of anymore. This country has to come down, because if it doesn't, it can't be reshaped in the fantasy land of the imaginings of these right-wing teabaggers of what the Constitution says when hardly a one of them has ever even bothered to read it, they think that the Declaration of Independence is quoted within it. They think that God is in the Constitution when the word does not appear once. Everybody sing, happiness is a warm gun, bang, bang, shoot, shoot. Yeah. So let's wrap up with a phone call. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Evening, Bob. How you doing?
How you doing, Jim? You there?
Yeah, Bob, are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Yeah, I just wanted to say hello. I'll probably be the last caller here right toward the end. But today is the anniversary of the federal building in Oklahoma City.
Right, and the right wing gun freaks commemorated it by threatening to do it again.
Well, you know, the year before that happened, it was 1994. I used to have to go to meetings in that building with the Coast Guard. Oddly enough, the Coast Guard has its headquarters in Oklahoma City. And strangely enough, I used to have to go to meetings in World Trade Center number 7, where we had offices there too. But when I came back in, I think it was 96, and I went to the site of that, or it was shortly there, it was after the 1995 bombing of the Alfred Amira Federal Building. And they had a cyclone fence around it with all types of teddy bears and stuff like that attached to it. And the smell of that place, the smell of death. And I knew some of those people who died there. I had met with them the year before, or in 94, excuse me. And you'll never forget that, I'll tell you that.
I can't imagine that you could. And to compare that in turn, Jim, with the fact that there is a group of people in this country who want to see this country ablaze with that sort of thing, they're monsters, Jim. They're just monsters.
Oh, I've seen them, and I've smelled what they've done, and I've seen what they've done, too. All right, sir, listen, you have a good evening, and congratulations on your grandson, okay?
Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much.
Good night, sir.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's the show. Thanks, everybody, for a wonderful Moran Monday. We didn't even get to half the Morans. But I think we got to enough. I'm told that Malloy is back live tonight. Yay. So that means I've got something to do between 9 and midnight. I'll be tuning over. Hope you will as well. Thanks, everybody, all of you, because all of you make this happen. All of you make this worth doing. You contribute financially. You contribute your ideas. You share your thoughts via phone, via email. And you prove, frankly, that there's a reason for this to exist. Now, if we could just get somebody out there to take note of it, wouldn't that be beautiful? Wouldn't it be great to expand the program to about 5 hours and, I don't know, and have millions of new friends adding to the conversation? Wouldn't that be beautiful? That's the goal somewhere along the way. So thanks for all that you do. Thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to John Fox and Peter Godbold. Thanks to Sue. And thanks for the call, Sue. Thanks to Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. To our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne at OsborneInc.com. And to my head writer, David in Tennessee. Thanks to you all. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net and coalriverwind.org. Thanks for getting here safe and sound, little guy, Ozzy. Happy to have you. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Cold River Mountain Watch. Cold River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Be amazed. You will be dumbfounded. You will be thunderstruck. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. You cannot kill your Morans without a program. No one will be admitted to this thin veil, this thin canvas veil behind me here, behind which reside Morans shocking to the conscience. Morans unbelievable to the human eye, unlistenable to the human ear. Hurry, hurry, hurry. It is Moran Monday on the horn. No cost at all, just a strong stomach and a willingness to contemplate the idiocy of the right wing in America. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Moran Monday begins now on the horn. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Step right up. Show your courage. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Oh, I love doing that. I love doing this. It's my favorite day of the week. It is Monday. And after a very, very busy week in Pittsburgh, we have a normal, well, you know, I mean, as far as this network is concerned, normal, you know. We all remember what Peter Godbolt said. Normal is only a setting on the dryer. But no, we've got a regular, yeah, that'll work, regular. We've got a regular broadcast week ahead of us, and I am terribly, terribly happy to make that announcement. Oh, yeah, 10-4, good buddies, we are here, rubber duck. It's Moran Monday on the horn. And we've got, as usual, we have a number of nominees. We've got a sort of retired Jersey installment from Caribou Barbie, the half-wit half-term governor. We've got an entry from her. You know, when you've gone pro like she has, when you've gone Moran pro, you can't expect her just to quit competing. It's the beauty queen syndrome. It's the pageant syndrome. Even though they're not playing the music or singing the song anymore, she just can't resist getting out on the Moran runway and taking one more stroll for the crown. So we got Mussolini tonight. But we've got so much more than that. We've got ordinary, everyday Morans. Just your garden variety work, Morans for the working day. Or not. We've got those kind of Morans. And we've got Cretaceous Morans. Really, Cretaceous. And then we've got media Morans. The only thing is, I'm not sure if the media Morans are them or us. I will leave that up to you to decide. And a couple of announcements here and there. I am a grandfather for the third time. Littlest guy having been born this past Saturday. Mother and baby are doing fine. They're home. Agnes is in full-on sweat condition alpha granny mode. You can't take the baby away. You ever seen those the gorillas in the zoo, and they get them a doll baby, and you can't take the doll baby away from the gorilla because you don't want a pissed off gorilla? Agnes. Really?
Every time, honey, what's going on? Oh, you've got the baby. And he is as cute as can be. Oh, he's just a little precious fella. And whenever he's asleep and Agnes is holding him, he is sleeping with a smile that I am quite certain is not gas. She really is. She's a pro with this little bitty baby thing. If we hadn't taken matters into our own hands, I'm quite certain that between the two of us, we would be the Waltons by now. Really. I mean, you know, at our advanced middle age, we'd have one in the cradle. But she's the smart one, and she just looked at me and said, "No more, Bob! No more!" So she's got grandbabies to play with. And so far, the other two, Loni and Jasper, have been very, very good. Jasper is absolutely hell-bent on giving his baby brother his bottle. If it gets set down, he picks it up and gets, "Bottle? Bottle?" Because, you know, he's two, and he's a big helper because he's a big boy. And Loni's all excited and hovering about and sort of like a little bee buzzing around the room. It's cute. What can you say? It's cute. And just, you know, just a moment of reflection on last week. I know it was frustrating for a lot of people not to have the show on at 6 p.m. But I've talked about where this network can go and what this network can be. And like I said, maybe I said this Friday, we got a little tiny vision, peeped over the mountaintop and off to the promised land in the distance, and we saw it. We saw things that the horn can do. You and I and the folks involved with the horn have talked about this idea of creating our own little liberal internet C-SPAN. And we took a step in that direction. I mean, my God, we went to Pittsburgh, and we did, on very little money, what it would have taken a $10 million truck to do. That is, broadcast that meeting to the entire world. We did it. We did it. We just did it. Because we can, and because it matters. And because building a liberal media infrastructure is about the most important thing that liberals could be doing right now. I mean, yes, I know all the things that confront us, whether it be social or environmental or political, but none of that matters if it...